Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. They get their work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Stroud under center. Takes the knee. The season is over for the Houston Texans. They charge into Arrowhead Stadium, but come up short 23-14 and see their drive for the AFC Championship game come to an end. Kansas City prevails. Texans start their offseason. The Chiefs back in the AFC Championship game, and Houston, 14 points on the board at the end of the night. They could not get it done here, and they'll reset going into 2025.
Yeah, here we are heading into another interesting offseason, and here we are once again. Sixth time the Texans make the divisional round. Sixth time we come in on a Monday licking our wounds and wondering what needs to happen for the Texans to get a little further. And there's a lot to dig into with this game. Both, I think, that people are very interested in here locally about the game itself, the way the Texans played, what the future looks like for this team. And then I think, too, storylines with this game that popped even beyond just Houston and Kansas City nationally. Yes, we will talk about the officials in this game. I know this is a strict, no referee complaining zone, but to a degree, we will lift the ban today because of the egregious calls. How are you doing this morning, my friend?
I'm good. I'm trying to lift myself out of this depression that I get at the end of every football season where my team doesn't win a Super Bowl, which has been every single season ever in the history of me. Mm-hmm. I was a Bills fan growing up. Mm-hmm. And it's tough, man. It's tough. And it is. It's compounded by the fact that you and I, especially, Sean, I think, have been getting attacked over and over again, by people who traditionally and normally love us, because we warned everybody, hey, don't get too wrapped up in the officiating, and then by gar,
I'm like, these people won.
I have been under attack nonstop.
Me too.
By people who I want to like me. Yeah. I don't mind being hated and despised by various people. But the people who I want to like me are also like angry at me right now. Yeah. This is the one thing I'd say about this. I'm angry, but it's a little bit different. I'm not mad at the officials themselves, because honestly, the way that rule is enforced, in the way it's written in the playbook and the way they expect the officials to call it, it's bogus. And Pat Mahomes exploits it to an extreme degree. He takes a rule that is meant to protect the safety of quarterbacks, and then he goes and puts himself in danger consciously to draw flags and exploit a rule that's supposed to protect quarterbacks. The NFL, for whatever reason, has decided not to make the fake slide illegal. Pat Mahomes is a practitioner of that. And then the NFL basically instructs the officials to, whenever there's any doubt about it at all, throw the flag, and then after that they won't make it reviewable. Mm-hmm. So the second unnecessary roughness, I think, was the most egregious, in that Mahomes had the chance to run out of bounds easily. It was right there for the taking. Instead, he put himself back into danger and ran towards three full-speed running defenders. And then basically just, and then slid late, puts the defenders in an impossible position where they can't help but hit them or worry about the fake slide or anything else, and you end up getting penalized for it and extending a drive. It's unacceptable. They got to fix this. I'll blame, it's the competition committee, it's Pat Mahomes himself, because it's Bush League bogus crap that he doesn't really need to do. He's damn good enough already. Mm-hmm. And then also, look, it's on the coaches and owners, too. Why have you not put more pressure on the competition committee? This is as much on D'Amico and Cal McNair as it is on anybody else here, because they allow this crap to exist.
Yep.
They're out of my system.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think just specific to that Mahomes play, because we're gonna hear from D'Amico on this, Will Anderson Jr. on this in just a second, Troy Aikman on this. Man, Pat Mahomes almost broke Troy Aikman on Saturday afternoon. Like, Troy yeah. was ready to run down to the field himself and strangle Patrick Mahomes, I think. That specific play, it's not just running. I'm fine with guys that can get out of bounds and running back into danger if they're actually trying to gain yards. You know what I mean? Like, if you're running back in,
seeking contact.
If you're running back in yeah. there and you're putting a shoulder down, or you're actually running like a running, like Josh Allen would
if
run
you're
back
making
into
forward
it.
Progress.
Yes,
right.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. yeah. Like, I have
he's
no problem.
Running laterally.
I have no problem with a guy not getting out of bounds if he's trying to act like a football player, not like James Harden. You know what I mean? Like, he.
Right.
And then there's the flop later in the game. Like, Mahomes is a great player. Maybe the greatest player of this particular segment of football that we're in, you know, last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah,
that stuff's a joke. Like, that is an out and out, that's a flat out joke. Mahomes should be ridiculed for that stuff.
The flopping, especially, like flopping needs to be fined heavily, especially for quarterbacks, because they make so much damn money. Yeah. The fact that it's not reviewable, the fact that the foot first slide in close quarters is never the best way to protect yourself as a quarterback. Case Keenum said as much when we had him on a few weeks ago. You know, what he tells young guys all the time is, if you're going to slide feet first, you better have room to do it. Because the last thing standing, the last thing remaining to hit yeah. by any defender, if he, whether he tries to hit you or not, is your head, and yeah. it's dumb.
Yep.
Like, if Pat Mahomes genuinely wanted to avoid contact there, he would have turtled and gone down just to the ground.
Yep.
And it's just, it's so damn un-American. Yeah, it's just wrong. And was it a factor in the game? Yes. I'm kind of wired to try to not blame officiating, because officiating is like a weather event. It's going to happen. You're going to have bad. This one bothers me because the actual rule and the
so
way
bad.
It's enforced, not the individual officials themselves, the actual rule itself is bogus. Well, and it's on. I blame Cal McNair and D'Amico Ryans as much as anybody else. Get this crap fixed in the offseason. Peyton Manning used to exploit the rule book all the time.
Right.
They fixed it.
Yes.
They changed two specific rules because Peyton Manning was dodgy in that manner.
As the local face of ownership and coaches, you blame them. I'm just picturing one of them getting in their car and turning on the radio, and they're like, what did I do?
Get this crap taken
no,
care of.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
right.
It's, yeah. it's bogus. It's yeah. bad for football.
I agree. No, I agree with you. Here was D'Amico after the game, and didn't exactly mention the referees by name, but boy, this sure does seem like a tip of the hat at the officiating here.
Yeah, we knew going into this game, man, it was us versus everybody. Right? When I say everybody, it's everybody, all of whatever. Everybody, the naysayers, the doubt, right? Everybody we had to go against today. And, you know, going with that, knowing going into this game, what we were up against, we can't make the mistakes that we made, right? We had a lot of self-inflicted mistakes that happened, whether it's special teams not converting our kicks, defensively not being where we're supposed to be in coverage, all offensively not protecting our quarterback and keeping him clean. So, you know, you marry that on top of everything else that we have to deal with, it's going to be a really tough uphill battle.
Okay, and so the pause there, right before he said everybody again, to me, that pause was clearly, you may as well put referees in that blank right there if we were transcribing it.
Yeah.
D'Amico acknowledging at the back end there that, yeah, there's plenty the Texans did wrong in this game, and we absolutely should acknowledge that. Like, the Texans, to Seth's point earlier, the referees didn't lose this game for the Texans. It was an element in the game not going their way, to be sure. But they outgained the Chiefs by 124 yards. They didn't turn the ball over. They were well over 50% on third down in this game. Like, they kept the chains moving in this game. They were
honestly going back and watching the second half again. CJ Stroud played magnificently.
Yes.
The play when he had actual time to throw.
Yeah.
And to the receivers he was throwing to, without Nico Collins on the field for much of the second half, like, he made some incredible throws.
Yeah.
It was a great personal performance by him.
He was tight windowing John Metchie and Xavier Hutchinson in this game. You know, like, yeah. So they were 10 of 17 on third down. They held the ball 7 minutes longer than the Chiefs. In a game against the team that held the ball for 10 of the final 11 minutes the last time these two teams played a month ago, they held the ball for 7 minutes longer. Again, I do this exercise, Seth. Like, you told me those things before the game, that they were going to do these things, the Texans, like, blindly. I would have said, I bet they win this game. If they're 10 of 17 on third down, if they're out possessing and out gaining the Chiefs significantly, they're not turning the ball over on the road in this game. Are you kidding me? And yet, the F-ups were so bad. It wasn't just the penalties that Mahomes got for being Mahomes. They had other very bad penalties in this game. The 8 sacks allowed are the huge thing, and then that there was a sea of them, a barrage of them when you're trying to come back in a one-possession game. The special teams, Frank Ross and his crew picked the worst time to be the worst unit for this team on Saturday. They were awful, and the defense let Travis Kelce kill them slowly throughout the afternoon.
Okay, the special teams. I mean, the only person outside of Houston who's happy about the way that game was officiated was Kymie Fairbairn. Because he hasn't been lambasted nearly enough for whatever the hell that was. He was lucky to make the one field goal he did make. It was really, really bad.
God, that's right. He barely snuck that one in there.
Tommy Townsend with that 34-yard punt when you really needed a good
needed
punt.
Needed it, yeah.
They got it. The Chiefs got the ball at midfield. The Texans' defense... I was harsher on them after the game than I should have been, just because I forgot how bad the field position was on that touchdown drive after the Tommy Townsend 34-yard punt.
Yeah.
The kickoff return, Chris Boyd doing whatever the hell he was doing, that was just a mess and a disaster. That was really, really bad.
It was
bad. That was frustrating.
It was bad.
The offensive line, I knew they were going to lose some snaps in that. I don't know exactly why they felt like for four quarters Shaq Mason was going to at some point turn it around and start playing good football.
Yeah.
Okay, there's that. I'm not mad at Bobby Slowick for having Dalton Schultz on a defensive end on that one sack. I'm mad at Dalton Schultz. They were look, the Chiefs were blitzing like crazy. They were sending six-man blitzes over and over and over again. Yeah, at times when you do that, you're going to end up with a tight end on a defensive end. Try to slow him down a smidgen.
Yeah.
Can you slow him down a smidgen?
Yeah.
The running backs were awful in pass protection and in blitz pickup. The 8 sacks is unacceptable. It's not like I saw that one guy on Twitter, Fluffy Foo-Foo Bear or whatever, said that he was adamant that, look, the Texans were sad after those bad calls went against them. And that's why, all right, are we really going to do this? Are we going to be talking about your football players being sad? I didn't realize the offensive line was depressed the entire season, and that's why pass protection was so bad. I didn't realize that Dalton Schultz only pass blocks when he's got the warm fuzzies. And if he's got the cold pricklies, it's not a good day for it. Like, no, they gotta hold up their end of the bargain there, too. The offense just simply wasn't good enough this year. They did some really good things in this game. I thought C.J. Stroud was really good individually. I'll make some excuses for him because the wide receivers... they were banged up enough going into the game. And then Nico Collins is on the field. Maybe according to Floofy Bear, he was on the sideline with melancholy instead of an actual injury.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, did you see the play that people thought maybe Nico got popped in that game? Like the play that got him that injury in that game? But he got chipped downfield by a linebacker, like popped right in the ribs by a linebacker. Yeah. All right, so we're off and running. We're going to dig plenty into this game. We're here for 2 hours. The off-season stuff for us will probably be just sprinkled in and probably more attacked later on in the week because there's still a ton to dig into in this game and in this season here with the Houston Texans as we're off and running here on a Reaction Monday, the final Reaction Monday of the year, at least when it comes to Texans content. Saturday's game, though, in my opinion, as we're going to watch the conference title round next week, yet another one that won't involve the Texans. Saturday's game, in my mind, was lost long before Saturday. I'll explain coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
organization, his team, and all year, man. He has blessed us and favored us tremendously, man. And I just got to give all glory to him. And we knew it was going to be us against the refs going into this game. And, you know, I talked to you guys early this week. And I was just saying, like, man, like, we got to go out there and we got to do us better. And, you know, in some instances we didn't do that, some instances we did. So we just got to keep going, man. Next offseason, you know, get the guys together, man. And, you know, everybody just coming together and just keep building that team chemistry and get past this hump.
It's funny, there were Texan players who were much more, I thought, outspoken about the officiating in that game on Saturday. Will Anderson's cut there got the most attention because he literally used the phrase, it was us against the refs. So that got, that was literally, that was a headline on ESPN on the bullet points on the side there. And I thought Will kind of redirected it back towards, like, we got to be better also here, but the fact that I wanted to play that whole cut, including Will talking about how God has blessed them during the year.
He's talking about God. I didn't know if he was talking about God or me.
He was talking. I thought the same thing. I'm like, not, is it? Yeah. Is he talking about? Nope, God. But the reason I left that there is because he was literally leading into his media availability. I wanted to illustrate that. Like, this wasn't the response to necessarily like a question in the middle of the whole thing. Like, Will's giving all glory to God and then immediately is going into, yeah, we thought it would be us against the refs. Like, that was the lead into the whole thing. So that was a big topic, a big talking point with a lot of the guys. I would say, to the credit of everybody who talked about the officials, specifically D'Amico Ryans, CJ Stroud as well, they did all redirect it back to them saying, look, you know, it's not, we didn't lose this game specifically because of officiating.
And I'll say again, look, Mahomes manipulates the rule book. And the officials themselves, I can't get angry at those dudes. They made a couple calls in that game that easily could have gone the other way and wouldn't have been overturned. The Eric Murray pass breakup, I don't think that would have been overturned by replay if it had gone one way or the other. The Dalton Schultz reception on the sideline, I don't think that necessarily would have been overturned by replay. Like, it wasn't like every single call went against the Texans. It's just that those roughing the passer or the unnecessary roughness ones were very, very, very ticky-tack gray area BS. I mean, I see Jared Goff get flat out blasted in the face on an interception return yesterday, and no, like, nothing there. Jaden Daniels got shoved 3 yards out of bounds. Nothing. It's that Mahomes flops and complains and whines his way, puts himself into danger at times, and the way the rule is written, they end up getting those calls, and it's bogus. Yeah. It's Bush League. It's cowardly, and it is un-American, but I'll set all that aside. The fact of the matter is, look, the Texans are amongst the most heavily penalized teams in the league when it comes to unnecessary roughness. Mm-hmm. They play a violent brand of football. Pat Mahomes is really good at drawing that specific penalty and doing it in a faking slides and ducking back in bounds type of ways. It's a factor going into the game. A factor going into the game. You're gonna have to fight that perception.
Well, and I tell you what, one way, and this is a good lead into what we're gonna talk about here. One way to at least diminish that, it would seem, would be play these games at home. Get better than a 4 seed. Be better than a 4 seed, and you're not leaving yourself open to the human nature that is not just a football thing. It's a basketball thing. It's a baseball thing. That's one of the reasons why home field advantage is something that's very desirable, is that the game, to this point, is still being officiated by humans, not robots, not computers yet. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game saying, we're not that far off.
Yeah, I don't feel like we're that far away. Like, these teams are in a whole different tier than us. It's a matter of us just doing what we're supposed to do, and we'll be just fine.
All right, and so to a degree, I agree with him, Seth. I mean, that was not an evenly played game on the scoreboard necessarily, but if you were just to watch that game, it didn't look like play to play. If you just ignored the scoreboard, you don't look at that. You don't look at those two teams going, all right, this one is significantly better than that.
They're definitely within reach. I think the offensive line is the biggest glaring issue. I was just looking at, and again, take PFF grades with a grain of salt, but in the aggregate, it's interesting that the only two teams in the playoffs whose offensive lines were in the bottom half of the rankings were the Steelers and the Texans. Mm-hmm. It just, and that's what it looked like. That offensive line is just not good enough. I think I'll give Laremy Tunsil a lot of credit for, I think, honestly, really trying to reinvent himself midway through the season when he just had to figure out how to stop getting false starts. I think he committed himself to being a better run blocker and a more involved complete player than he's ever been. So I fully credit him for that. It was cool to see. Titus Howard did some good things as a left guard, but on the sum total of it all, they're just a bad offensive line. There's room for improvement and hope. Blake Fisher is still young, all of that. But they're just, I'm watching some of these games, just any of these other teams in the playoffs this weekend, man, they got some hosses on their offensive line.
Yeah.
Even when they weren't playing well, they were just, it's night and day, the level of physicality, technique, and everything
technique,
else.
Technique, execution, the mental side of it, just, yeah you're right. I was, what was the early game was the Rams and the Eagles yesterday. The Eagles ran some play where they had a guy pulling, you know, like Saquon. I mean, they got good players, too, that are carrying the football, but you're just watching, and it's a Jeff Stoutland offensive line, so they've been doing this forever. Like, it's just, as a Texan fan, it's depressing to watch those other games and see these other teams execute the way that they
and
do.
And even the Eagles, I mean, they had it was almost a little bit of like a Joe Mixon plus type of performance, because Saquon Barkley was averaging about 2.5 yards per carry on the runs, except for his two huge runs. Yeah. But it's like there's throughout the course of the season, yeah, the blocking, Matt, and it was hard to block, man. I honestly felt bad for offensive linemen for the first time in my life in both those games yesterday.
For the weather?
Yeah, because, man, the Rams were running games really, really well, and they made life difficult for the Eagles. Well, I actually know the Eagles were running games even better.
Yeah.
The Eagles made life really difficult for the – so I digress. The other big thing that was frustrating was just old man Travis Kelce running roughshod over the Texans defense. That was really like losing track of Travis Kelce to the point where he didn't even have to serpentine his way around.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing any of that. Remember the one play where Henry Toa was just standing behind Travis Kelce, kind of waiting for him to do his thing?
Yeah.
And Travis Kelce was just standing there. Like, that's, you didn't even get the A-plus version of Travis Kelce, and they still lost track of him way too often. I think Azeez Alshire was probably the biggest transgressor on some of the big plays, but they took turns. You know, there was Eric Murray one time, there was Miles Bryant another time. You just can't let Travis Kelce be the guy that's going to crush you like that. Not at his age.
Yeah.
Not with his body type these days.
Yeah.
No.
So my thought coming into this segment was that this game was lost before Saturday. The Texans' loss on Saturday is, to me, Seth, and this plays into the officiating to a degree, like you and I just talked about, but I think it also, getting a home game in the divisional round is ultimately, I think, going to be the recipe for getting the Texans out of this morass that they're in of being the four seed, winning at home, and then going and losing. And this one was frustrating because this is a winnable game. Like a lot of these other divisional round games, last year, for example, they were outclassed. Like the Ravens were just a better football team. Look, it's tough to get deep into the playoffs. Like there's a chance we may look back at this game and go, like in the next couple of years, go, man, their best chance to get to the AFC title game might have been in Kansas City. Kind of a vulnerable Kansas City team that's, you know, that's not, it's a good team. It's not a great team, I don't think. They allowed the Texans to hang in that game. You got a few bad calls from the officials. This is where, though, the Texans, to me, lost that game is losses that they sustained in the regular season that are just inexcusable. If you can be the two seed and get a home game, you're not going to be victim to those calls, theoretically. You're going to have the crowd on your side. You're going to be playing in a stadium where your defense forces a bleep ton of turnovers, right? They force no turnovers in Kansas City. That is a different Texans team that plays at home. They had losses this year, Seth, from the middle of the season on. They started having these losses that after the game, you and I would read tweets on Monday. The Lions lost, for example, only the third time since 1994 that a team won a game while throwing 5 interceptions, right?
Yeah.
The Lions, the first team since 19, these are actual stats, first team since 1970 to overcome 5 interceptions and trail by more than 2 touchdowns and still win the game. That's week 10. Week 12, 2 weeks later, and these are at home. 2 weeks later, Will Levis, quarterback taking eight sacks and throwing a pick six since 1960, are now 3-33 in those games. 3-33 since 1960. This Chiefs loss on Saturday. The Texans are now the only team in postseason history to outgain their opponent by more than 100 yards and not turn the ball over and lose the game. Teams in the postseason prior to that that fit that statistical profile were 49-0. Like, yeah. And that's not even to talk about, hey, they were plus three against the Packers in turnovers. Teams like that win 92% of the time. Actual stat. So that's like, that's actually kind of subdued compared to these historical, these historical kind of blueprints that they've had to walk their way into these losses. So, well, I mean, they lost eight games on the year, and four or five of them are games that, the statistical gods would go, no. Maybe you lose one of those this season, right, not five.
That's where, I mean, this last game was kind of set aside because the officiating or the way the rule is enforced on the quarterback, it's whether you want to blame the officials, I tend to blame the rule itself and the way it's enforced and the lack of a ban on the fake slide and all of that, whatever. It was a factor. It's not the only reason the Texans lost. Taking eight sacks had nothing to do with the quarterback protection rule, but it was a fact. It was certainly a factor when you have the margin like that. I think with a lot of those losses, the biggest thing for me is that, man, the defense improved a lot, but they just absolutely have to stop letting up some of these big plays. And this is where D'Amico and I differ in some regards. I really, like, vehemently disagree with D'Amico's philosophy about tackling, to the point where he has said multiple times that he doesn't worry about missed tackles. Because as long as there's a swarm mentality, that's fine in regular season games versus bad opponents. Yeah, if you got a lot of guys rallying to the ball, then yeah, you're going to get people down. But you're also a team that just has allowed way too many huge chunk plays. And the bad tackling is part of that.
Oh, yeah.
You can't all of a sudden, at the very end of the year, D'Amico started talking about how they had to be better at tackling instead of just flat out saying he's not worried about missed tackles. They're one of the worst tackling teams in the league. And it undoes a lot of really good stuff they do defensively. Yeah. I don't get it. I don't understand. I feel like D'Amico and I are wired the same way philosophically in a lot of ways. There have been some very, very good hard-hitting physical defenses, the Legion of Boom specifically, who are the best tackling teams in the league.
Yeah.
They're not, it's not mutually exclusive that you can't hit hard and cause turnovers, but also tackle soundly. They've got to fix that next year. It's sloppy. It's sloppy, and it's I'm philosophically opposed to it.
Travis Kelce, I don't know that I've watched a game where he's broken a tackle all year. Like, he goes down at the touch of a feather. The 49-yard play downfield to him, Kalen Bullock missed, Azeez Al-Shaair missed. He's dragging a guy into the goal-to-go area of the field. Like, it was wild.
It's pathetic. It's really, really bad tackling, and it's unacceptable. And there's got to be a change in methodology, honestly. Some teams have tackling coaches, like specialists that work on it. That defense is too good to be allowing as many passing touchdowns and stupid things like that. And Travis, you're exactly right. We saw Travis Kelce in the regular season. You could sneeze on him and he'd fall down.
Yeah.
And you're just letting that old man, it's like you got knocked out by Morgan Freeman in Million Dollar Baby. You know?
Yes.
He went in Million Dollar Babied you.
That's right. That's right.
I wish I'd been what happened to the chicken that one, falling on a stool. Just been like, that's what I felt like doing. Spoiler alert. I felt like biting my tongue so I could suffocate on my own blood. Okay,
there you go.
Good morning, everybody.
All right, we're off and running on a Reaction Monday. The Texan season is over. We'll talk plenty about that as we roll on here. But yeah, man, be better in the regular season. You don't have to worry about going to Kansas City anymore. You can host a game in the divisional round. That would be nice, I would say. That would be awfully nice. All right, headlines. Let's get to them here. We'll talk Texans in headlines. We'll hear from head coach D'Amico Ryans on exactly what happened in coverage against Travis Kelce and the other three playoff games. How are we feeling about these two matchups that we've got now in the AFC and NFC title games? We'll hit that in headlines and a whole lot more. We got a college football playoff title game tonight as well. Ton to get to here on a Monday. Stay there.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Stroud under center, takes a knee. The season is over for the Houston Texans. They charge into Arrowhead Stadium, but come up short 23-14 and see their drive for the AFC Championship game come to an end. Kansas City prevails. Texans start their offseason.
Yeah. That one hurts, man. That was a winnable game for the Texans. on Saturday. They lose 23-14 to the Kansas City Chiefs. Obviously, the officiating a big topic in that game. But D'Amico Ryans, I think, hit the nail on the head with this. Until we can do things right, we're not going to win games like this.
As where we stand right now, like, we had to be better. Obviously, we're not good enough to beat a really good football team, right? So we can do the things we need to do consistently and all the time, that's when we'll be able to, you know, come here and be in this spot and win a football game. But unfortunately, like, we still got things to clean up of our own.
Yeah, they are close. I mean, and that's where I try to keep perspective when I'm feeling depressed, is that they are close. And if there's one thing that I hope is real, it's that they did figure out how to run the ball in the last six quarters of the playoffs. That after not really being able to do it consistently almost ever in the regular season, something did click there. I think that there's potential there with Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard on the left side if Titus chooses to accept that mission. My goodness, please do. I think there's potential there. The biggest question for me is really just the offensive line and the pass protection in total, including the tight ends and the running backs, but then also Bobby Slowick and his involvement with it. Like, just where, how far can Bobby Slowick and some of these guys on this offense really take this team? And by the way, they got to go out and get a wide receiver in the offseason.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah. Like, yeah. Here we are. It 6 months ago, it was, wow, look at these three wide receivers they have. You can't reasonably expect Tank Dell to be ready to go in September, nope, given the horrificness of his injury. And Stephon Diggs is a free agent and old. So,
coming off an ACL.
And coming off an ACL yeah, as an old man.
Yeah.
And we just don't know about Bobby Slowick and the coaching on the offensive line, everything else. Like, there's defense. I don't want to act like, oh, the defense is just going to keep getting better no matter what. But, man, the defense played really well with some blemishes, but with two rookies in the secondary, with Will Anderson as a second-year player, with Henry Toa coming on the way he has, and I think he'll continue to improve. There's a lot more reasons to feel like, okay, yeah, that defense can be championship caliber than there is on offense right now.
Yeah.
CJ, I thought, played very, very well given the circumstances.
I did too. I thought CJ had a really good game. I know it sounds crazy in a game where the offense only scored 12 points to say that, but man, he did not have a lot of help out there, and I thought he made some big-time throws in that game, protected the football, didn't turn the ball over. I think most of the sacks, to me, were more on the protection than on CJ. He wasn't perfect, but I thought more of them were on the protection than on him.
And especially when you look downfield and see, especially when Nico Collins wasn't out there, where. And I'll go back. Look, though, man, I'm watching Washington this weekend, and hey, Cliff Kingsbury, I was skeptical. I didn't want Cliff Kingsbury as an offensive coordinator. You know what I saw Jaden Daniels have? Options, yeah, when there was a corner or safety blitz.
Yep.
I mean, that just, it was an easier operation for Jaden Daniels. Mm-hmm. And I mean, credit to him. It's amazing. Like, he deserves all the credit in the world. But he's a freaking rookie. And he's got options when the protection isn't there. And CJ, it's just not the same.
Going to be an interesting few days. D'Amico Ryans does meet with the media this morning, I believe 11:30, late this morning. I'm sure the guys on In the Loop will have that, and we'll have highlights of that throughout the day. Because there are still questions to be answered for D'Amico Ryans. He didn't get asked about Shaq Mason being out there in the post-game availability. You know, Shaq was not good. Their best version of the offensive line was the one that was in, that played the second half of that win over the Chargers. And I know Juice Scruggs was banged up also, but Shaq Mason was bad in this football game, really bad in this football game. So that needs to be answered for. D'Amico was asked after the game about Travis Kelce's big afternoon. 7 catches, 117 yards, touchdown. Here was D'Amico on what happened with Travis Kelce.
There's mental miscues, right? I wish I had more for you. It's just mental miscues and coverage, things that we've done before. And unfortunately today, for some reason, in the biggest moment, we don't get it done.
Like, horrible.
I think with Azeez Alshire, I don't know how much his injury might have been affecting him, because there were a couple plays in the run game that I think he, very similar to plays that he made last week.
Yeah.
He missed the tackle on Kareem Hunt on that final touchdown drive. In coverage, that Travis Kelce touchdown, I haven't watched on the All-22 yet. I'm watching on the I was watching the TV copy yesterday, and I'm just trying to figure out why he's waiting for a crosser to come over when Travis Kelce is the crosser right into the hole there in the middle of the field. And then Pat Mahomes on that play, that was the one where Pat Mahomes was basically horizontal to the ground as he's throwing it. Yeah. As he's throwing that, like I would have given Aziz a break if he thought that Mahomes was turning into a runner, because he was running towards the line of scrimmage, and it's right at that point where the linebacker's got to make a decision about whether to go up and tackle the quarterback or not. But Aziz's eyes were off to the left, and Travis Kelce was wide open behind him. And it wasn't – could the safety have gotten there? Maybe, but – like Aziz could have been in the lane. It just and there were just too many instances like that with old man Kelce.
Yeah, I hate to say this about Aziz because he was such a big storyline coming into this game. Being back for this game versus missing the first one, he left the game for a while to get looked at in the tent. You know, he was one of those guys in the press box, Seth. They go, so and so is questionable with a knee injury. He was one of those guys in this game. They might have been better off with Neville Hewitt out there on Saturday.
Well, I'll tell you another thing. They played a lot of zone. You know, D'Amico wasn't all out blitzing or anything, and which is fine if you tackle.
Yeah.
And they couldn't tackle Travis Kelce. That's the biggest part. They've got to change their philosophy on tackling in the offseason. It's not acceptable. It just flat out, you can be a hard-hitting defense and still also be good tacklers. And you can't miss tackles like that on Kelce. So the strategy of playing zone was fine if they had limited some of Travis freaking Kelce's run after the catch.
He's the only one.
Yeah. He's not that guy anymore. Yeah. You can't let him be that guy.
Yeah.
That was very, very disappointing to me.
Yep. All right. The other playoff games, let's touch on these here quickly. Washington beat the Lions in the late game on Saturday, 45-31. This is a game where the Commanders they led for the entire second half of this game. The play that the Lions are getting killed on today and for most of the weekend was, I believe, down 10. I think it was 38-28 at the time. They ran a play with Jameson Williams where he was throwing the ball downfield.
That was, listen. Okay, if it had worked out, it would have been brilliant. Earlier in the game, David Montgomery had a shovel pass.
Yeah.
It was a handoff or a pitch to David Montgomery, and then Montgomery shovel passes it to Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant because it worked. I do think that it's an indication of, man, Jared Goff just is not the guy.
No.
He's stuck in this mode. Every year now in the playoffs, you see where, all right, well, I can see why Sean McVay, you know, wanted a guy that long-term could actually get it done. Matt Stafford doesn't put up the same numbers and what have you, but you trust him in crunch time.
Yeah.
Jared Goff had some bad interceptions in that game.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't excuse it because of the weather or anything like that. And I think Ben Johnson, the coordinator, shows exactly what he thinks of Jared Goff. It wasn't just one trick play. It was like, no, we have to have multiple other people than Jared Goff throwing the football.
Yeah, Goff left that game for a little while after getting popped after a pick six that he threw.
Mahomes, if that were Pat Mahomes, he would have gotten flagged 17 times.
17
they
times.
They would have brought a guillotine out on the field to execute the defender.
The first ever play where a player would actually have to Venmo his fine money on the spot right there.
Yeah.
He's suspended on the spot, like on the field, gets yanked off the field. That's what would have
had to agree to take Jackson Mahomes to a lunch.
yes, weird stipulations, yes.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring that up is, and I give Ben Johnson credit for this, like Teddy Bridgewater, who was coaching high school football a month ago, literally, comes into the game, and he runs a reverse with Jameson Williams that goes 65 yards or whatever it was for a touchdown. Like, Ben, it sounds weird to say in a game where a Jameson Williams interception on a trick play was a tipping point in this game. But yeah, like I watch this game and I'm like, man, Ben Johnson has squeezed every ounce out of Jared Goff that you can possibly get.
The one issue I'd have with that is a play design. Because again, trick plays, it's always hindsight reasoning. It was either brilliant or the dumbest thing in the world based on whether it works out. I do question having a receiver throw from the middle of the field to the sideline like that.
Yeah.
Like I prefer to get him out towards the boundary and it's clear cut. All right. The DB either bid on it or he didn't. I don't need him making touch fade throws from the pocket.
Philly over the Rams yesterday, 28-22. Saquon Barkley went for over 200 yards again. And then the Buffalo Baltimore game was a fun game too. I don't know how Mark Andrews sleeps on the flight home or last night. Mark Andrews, who put the ball on the ground in the fourth quarter on just a horrible fumble, where the Ravens were driving for a winning or the lead touchdown, and then he dropped a tying 2-point conversion with under 30 seconds to go. That was, for him, for any tight end in the NFL, should have been an easy catch.
It was a classic. Brandy and I almost got in an argument about this in the, last night. It was one of those moments where the throw was probably, I'm not criticizing the throw in itself, but the situation is Lamar knew that he had to throw it with touch. He didn't want to just rifle it in there, and it was almost a little too much touch.
Yeah.
It's still on Andrews. It's 100% on Andrews, but you can see where it's like it's just floating there a little too long.
Yeah.
And it just hit him right in the belly. Oh, in the belly. In the belly. I could see myself doing it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's 100% what I would do.
My only solace if I were Andrews would have been, well, it would have tied the game. We might have still lost it in overtime. You know, like if that were to take the lead. Like, if that were to take the lead, like, it's already bad. But, all right, we'll keep it moving. Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. All right, I've got 6 highlights from the game on Saturday between the Chiefs and the Texans that I think each of them highlight a theme of this game that impacted the outcome. The reasons why, this is the autopsy of all autopsies of a Texans playoff loss that we're going to do, and we'll do it coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we're going to go through Saturday's game. I think there are 6 highlights here that I've got that I think highlight a theme of this game. Reasons why the Texans may have lost, things that they needed to do better, things they need to do better moving forward, quite honestly, that we will get to. Nico, this is a text message. Nico getting cheap-shotted is the biggest grievance nobody's talking about. He was torching them up to that point. Yeah, I guess if you saw it, there was the video I saw was an all-22 where Nico's going out on a route.
Yeah.
And it was definitely further than 5 yards down the field. You know, inside of 5 yards, there's a lot you're allowed to do to receivers. It was definitely more than 5 yards down the field, and a linebacker came by and almost chipped him like a tight end. Not named Dalton Schultz, would chip a pass rusher.
Or a running back would chip.
Yeah, so, I'm with you on that. I actually, as long as we're talking about Nico, I was talking and texting with a lot of people yesterday with the team, on the team. A lot of people just react to it. And one of the anecdotes that I thought was interesting was that Nico apparently, at certain points in the game, was appealing to the referees about all the holding and the grabbing that was going on downfield.
Yeah.
And apparently, according to somebody that I talked to, the DBs on Kansas City were like laughing at him and saying, dude, they ain't calling that on us here in Arrowhead Stadium. They were like, that's bless your heart kind of thing. Like, Nico, bless your heart.
Yeah, the conspiracy theories aside or anything else, like Nico, I think he's that good now that it's the point where he gets like a miniature version of the Shaq rules where teams are allowed to abuse him more physically because he's such a big, strong dude.
Yeah.
That might be the thing he has to work on in the offseason with Andre Johnson is like, all right, man, they're not going to call a lot of this stuff because you're so big and strong and that it doesn't look like it should be affecting you, that you just got to be that much more violent with your hands and anticipate it because it's you can fight City Hall or you can just get to beating people no matter what they're doing to
you. Dude, how great is it that that's the conversation we're having about Nico Collins right now? I mean, I hate that it is a result of him getting manhandled by the Kansas City secondary on Saturday.
Manhandled's a little loaded, but yeah, abused, physically abused.
Whatever it is, whatever verb you want to use, that we're having this conversation that he's that level of receiver that deserves that treatment is a real sign of progress with Nico Collins. You know,
right. Yeah, no, he is that guy. And when he wasn't on the field, again, that's why I say CJ played, whatever the final numbers were, he played way better than the numbers indicate.
Yes.
And in the second half because of the level of difficulty of some of the throws. I think where the pass rush got to CJ, more so than on the sacks, because I'll go back and watch more closely. I don't really blame him for any of the sacks because the pressure was so quick.
Yep.
It was right up the gut at times, or it was just it was Karloftis not having to slow down at all on a beeline to him off the edge.
Yeah.
Some of the outlet throws, you know, he had the one that he sailed to Joe Mixon. There's another one where he was late to make the decision. And it just, that's where I think he could have made better decisions. But he made some really high-level difficulty throws to receivers who didn't have a lot of separation.
I agree. I thought CJ was good on Saturday, for sure.
Oh, Yeah, it was a play when he tried to force it to Nico. That was a dangerous throw.
Yes.
He could have had Dalton Schultz for the check down in the flat.
Yep.
Like that one was the one where, all right, man, you gotta be more careful in that situation.
Feel good about CJ moving forward, man. Feel really good about him. All right, so let's get to these highlights. We'll do acknowledge me's at 7:20-ish thereabout. So in about 15 minutes or so, we'll do our acknowledgments for the weekend in a segment we call Acknowledge Me. First highlight is the first highlight that's on the highlight sheet because it was the first damn play of the game. Flashbacks of 2015 season, January 2016, I thought possibly. If you recall that game, the Texans allowed the opening kickoff by Niall Davis to be returned for a touchdown. They didn't allow a touchdown here, but this was a bad start for what was going to be a horrible special teams day.
Here's the opening kickoff. It'll be returnable for sure. Over the 5, 10, 15, straight ahead, 20, 25, and 30. Spun out of it, 40, left side, and still going. Remigio, 45 of Houston, cutting back, and Boyd brings him down at the 30.
Okay, so that was the opening kickoff. Not for a touchdown, but this play, the theme, obviously, that highlights is how horrible special teams were. There was not one thing on special teams that the Texans did well Saturday.
The only one good thing was Robert Woods deking that guy into not downing the punt. Remember?
That was one thing.
Tommy Townsend's 34-yard punt was not one of the good
things. It was not. Where we were literally all looking at each other going, they need a big punt right here. You know,
Kymie Fairbairn, I don't want to mess this up. Could you please detail all the missed kicks that Kymie Fairbairn had?
Kymie Fairbairn missed a 55-yard field goal. Like
I remember that.
That looked like you or I kicked it. Like, it wasn't even close.
It looked like me on the driving range.
Right.
They sliced the hell out of it. I thought it was the wind, but there's no way the wind blew it that hard.
Barely made, I think, a 47-ish yarder one.
Yeah.
Like, snuck it inside the upright. So, barely made that. Missed a PAT. Second straight Kansas City game where Kymie Fairbairn has missed what would have been a game-tying point after touchdown in the third quarter. Because he did the same thing after Tank's touchdown 4 weeks ago. And then holding on to the last string of hope, if they kick a field goal here, if you recover an onside, you can still get a shot at this game. Nope. Blocked. 35
yards.
No,
and it was a low kick.
Yeah.
It was like, dude, at point-blank range right there, when you're a defensive lineman and you block a kick like that, you just thank baby Jesus for that, because that one was on Kymie too. He was atrocious. He was just god awful.
He was bad. Now in this particular play that we just played, Chris Boyd did force a fumble at the end of that return. The ball was on the ground. Kansas City, I believe, Samaje Perine ended up falling on the ball. Chris Boyd had no clue that Samaje Perine fell on the ball, because as soon as he forced the fumble, he starts running over to the sidelines, rips his helmet off, tosses it, gets called for a 15-yard penalty that he doesn't even see he's getting called for, comes up and shoves Frank Ross with two hands. It turns out in celebratory fashion, not in anger, but still, what are you doing?
Especially because does Chris Boyd not understand the rules of football? That a fumble needs to actually actively be recovered by your team? Like, what? I don't understand at what point Chris Boyd, he didn't even look back to see who had recovered it or anything.
No.
And then he takes his helmet off and gets the 15-yard penalty. What the hell was that?
Okay.
It was so weird.
Here was D'Amico Ryans on that sequence of happenings with Chris Boyd.
With Boyd, what happened, what I saw is, you know, we can't come out the first play and throw our helmet. Like, we understand that's silly, right? And that's not what we teach. That's not what we're about at all. So for us to be here at this moment and to throw our helmet, like, we know the rules and know we can't do that, and it just puts the team, right, in a negative light to start the game, right? We give up a big return. We take our helmet off to add 15 more yards onto the play. It's just not smart football.
I'm sorry, Mark, to start the broadcast like this, but I am so over Chris Boyd. It's every week something that hurts this football team from a penalty standpoint, and you start the game with that stuff.
Yeah. That was Andre Ware. Andre Ware was not happy with Chris Boyd there.
At some point in the offseason, we got to make Ben do a ridiculously long and hard project, but of going through and finding every time that Andre has been done with somebody. Because the other one was Titus Howard when it appeared like he stripped the ball out of C.J. Stroud. I know that's not what
actually. It was a Detroit game, Ben. If you're looking for it, that would be week 10.
Yeah.
Ben, week 10 is where you need to go find that one.
But Andre, at that point, Andre's big point was, man, too many times offensive linemen are just standing around watching, turned spectators. It's like, hey, I just have to block for 3 seconds and then I'm done. I think they got better at that as the season went along. But,
yeah.
Understandably very upset with Chris
Boyd. I don't know if Chris Boyd is still on this team. Andre's right. It was not just that play. Like, Chris Boyd gets a penalty every week, it feels like, on special teams. He's not a good enough player to make up for that, for sure.
Was it Chris Boyd that hit the dude that had signaled fair catch?
That was D'Angelo Ross who did that.
who's made up for
who's
it
recovered nicely
then.
From that, yeah. So that was highlight number one. Literally the first play of the game. The theme there, atrocious special teams. All right, the next one. Patrick Mahomes, we've talked about this play, the Kelce catch and run. Here's what it sounded like on the broadcast.
Here's a blitz by Murray. Here's Mahomes throwing it downfield, and wide open is Travis Kelce, who breaks a tackle, breaks another tackle, running right 20, 15, 10, and tackled at the 6-yard line by Henry Toa Toa. Kelce, so strong, gets a goal to go for the Chiefs.
Okay, so the theme there is they just were way too easy on Travis Kelce in this game. And the tackling, and to your point earlier, Seth, on that play in particular, the tackling was poor.
People falling off of him like it was Priest Holmes in his prime or something. That was the frustrating thing. And it's been a theme for the Texans all season long. It's one of the reasons they allowed more passing touchdowns than anybody else in the league. Despite playing really good football most of the time, they're a bad tackling football team. This frustrates me because there is no excuse for it. And it frustrates me doubly because D'Amico has said multiple times that he doesn't worry about missed tackles as long as everybody's swarming to the ball. Well, in a situation like that, there's only so many guys that can swarm to the ball. The guys that get there got to make the freaking tackle on a geriatric Travis Kelce. It's unacceptable. And you can't blame, oh, well, we don't practice in pads anymore. Guess what? Most of the teams in the league also aren't allowed to practice in pads much, and they tackle better than you do. There are ways to practice tackling without wearing pads. There is a sport that exists called rugby. They spend a lot of time drilling practice with no pads. A lot of football teams adopt those techniques. This team looks like a team that does not spend any time on tackling technique, and it's a weird... In my opinion, it's a weird blind spot for D'Amico to have because he wasn't a bad tackling linebacker. I don't get it. I honestly don't get it.
Yep. So that was Mahomes to Kelce. We're going to hear from Kelce again in these highlights, but that was number two. Number three, this is actually a good one for the Texans. Here was Joe Mixon capping off maybe this might be the best drive of the D'Amico Ryans era.
Stroud digs in. Irv Smith motions to the right. Handoff, Mixon, running right, has the 10, has the 5, he dances into the end zone! Touchdown, Houston!
All right, so
Joe Mixon!
Of course, Kymie Fairbairn would go on to miss the PAT. The Texans would continue to trail 13-12. But to me, the theme there, Seth, with that highlight is that when the game script dictated they could still do this, you know, run the football, they reached a point in the game where you're down by 2 scores and it's hard to pound Joe Mixon between the tackles at that point. But when the run was still an option for the Texans, they ran the football really well with Mixon. 18 carries for 88 yards, and that might have been his longest carry of the day touchdown.
It was consistently churning out yardage. Yes. Just by far the biggest positive development for me in the postseason was that, man, this is 2 games in a row now where they've had long, sustained drives that heavily featured the run.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out and soaking up 10 minutes of clock time, Pat Mahomes off the field for Pat Mahomes, who looked rusty as hell early on.
Yeah.
You end up keeping him off the field the entire halftime. So, like, I don't know how many minutes off of the actual real clock
right. That
is when you include 10 minutes of game time plus the 12 to 15 minutes of halftime.
Yeah.
It's a long time you had kept him out there. And luckily for him, he draws a bogus penalty on the next drive to keep extending it. But
that was the most impressive drive that I think Bobby Slowick has architected. And then it came in the second half, when they've really struggled in the second half this season, for most of the season in the second half. 15 plays, 82 yards, I think. I mean, they started backed up because there was another special teams penalty. I think it was MJ Stewart. MJ Stewart and Chris Boyd, I think their entire role on special teams is just to get penalties. That's the only time you ever hear their name. But long drive, 10 minutes, 24 seconds, Mixon running it in. Yes, the theme there is I thought that there are... The Texans ran the football well. That was the positive, I think, to take away offensively. And your great point, Seth. I think the last game, too, against both Chargers and the Chiefs. Two good defenses in playoff environments. They ran the football really, really well. Travis Kelce continued to torture the Texans, though. And here was a touchdown that made it a made it an 8-point lead.
On third and goal from the 11, here's the snap. Mahomes in the pocket, trying to scramble forward. Mahomes throws last moment, and caught, touchdown. He was leading forward, got the ball off to Kelce for six. Unbelievable. Yeah, he was going down, and he threw it. You're going to see that highlight for a long time.
It was. I'm glad Vandy kind of clarified that. He said he's leaning forward. I'm like, he was falling down, and then Vandy hit it, and he's right. That was, if you're a Chiefs fan and you're looking for a highlight that pops about that game, that
yeah.
I think that's what makes it such a shame that Mahomes, like, I think that, to me, the what I'll remember about that game with Mahomes is just how wussy-ish the things he was doing to draw those 15-yard penalties and try to flop and draw more 15-yard penalties was. That was an instance in this game where you go, all right, man, you can do everything right, but he's just Patrick Mahomes.
That's the frustrating part of it is, and it's one of the reasons that, I sat here and defended James Harden for exploiting the playbook year after year after year. It's really, really frustrating when you see somebody that's as talented as Pat Mahomes who does this, just frankly unmanly behavior of exploiting a rule that's meant to protect quarterbacks and using it to draw penalties. Mm-hmm. The first penalty, I didn't think it was right. I felt like there's no evidence that, like, the intent, like the spirit of the rule and everything, I feel like that should be a penalty that's reviewable.
Yes.
But it happens, and I wasn't as upset about it, as bad as it was. The one where Pat Mahomes could have easily run out of bounds, if what the quarterback is trying to do is protect himself, he could have run out of bounds, but instead he turns back towards danger, runs laterally towards contact, yeah, and then slides late and does exactly what he wanted to do, which was draw a penalty there. Yep. He wasn't trying to get positive yardage or anything else like that. It's just, it's Bush League crap, and yet he's going to get away with it and he's going to draw the penalties. And honestly, it's on the coaches and it's on the owners for not putting more pressure on the competition committee. College football has banned the fake slide for several years now, and the NFL, for whatever reason, doesn't see fit to do it. They haven't made it reviewable to have some kind of judgment introduced into the unnecessary roughness on these slides. It's just, it's very, very frustrating. If the Texans hadn't had such a letdown offensively in the fourth quarter, I'd be way more angry about it. It's just that it was a contributing factor to this loss, but it wasn't the only thing that contributed to it.
No, you and I are on the same page there. The Texans did plenty to lose this game, no doubt about it. And this next highlight here, we got two more, and then we're going to get to acknowledge me. This was the Texans down 8 in the fourth quarter. They're at the Kansas City 40-yard line, 4th and 10.
On 4th and 10, Stroud takes the snap. There's pressure. CJ out to the right, trying to shake by a defender, and he's sacked back at the 44-yard line of Houston. Took a deep sack at a bad time, because instead of the Chiefs having the ball at the 40, their 40, it's at the Houston 44, and that one hurt a lot.
Yeah, Vandy nailed it. Now, give credit to the defense. They were able to get a 3-and-out and get off the field and get the ball back there. The defense stood up in this game at times when the offense and special teams really put them in bad spots. There, the junctures in this game that I feel like where I was asking myself, what's going on, D'Amico? Like, what are we doing here? Definitely throughout the course of the game, Shaq Mason still being in there would be one. I would say the second would be the Xavier Hutchinson near first down that looked clearly like he got the first down that, yeah, could have been challenged. Now, they end up converting after a false start, put him back 5 yards to make it 3rd and 6 instead, yeah, of 3rd and 1. They end up converting. That was on the drive, the 10-minute drive. So that didn't come back to hurt them. But I'm like, oh, man, D'Amico challenged this. This looks obvious. This play right here, though, that we just played, the 4th and 10, was a complete cluster. The play gets it. They don't break the huddle until there's like 7 seconds left on the play clock.
And it was,
and you got all 3 timeouts left. This is the season right here.
And this was right before the 2-minute warning, right?
No. There was still time to go in there.
Oh, that was the other one. Okay, yeah. I was thinking of the one where CJ tried to call it.
Yeah, there's about ten minutes to go in the game.
This play was, again, there were too many times when the pass protection broke down where I felt like CJ was trying to manage the pocket the right way, but because protection broke down so quickly, there was no place to step up because guys had a beeline right to him. And it was just, it was the thing that has ailed the Texans for just huge, huge. They improved in pass protection in some ways, but at other times, man, like Dalton Schultz is just, he's a non-factor. Blake Fisher is a rookie, and he's going to, at times when he's one-on-one, he's going to lose. I feel good about him for the long term. Some of the pressure up the middle was extreme and immediate. It was bad pass protection. It wasn't a flukish 8 sacks that CJ took. And he didn't have options downfield in most of them where he could have conceivably gotten rid of the ball quickly.
Yep. So that was bad. The whole thing was bad there. The execution once they snapped the ball, whatever the process was to get the play in and get out of the huddle, someone was moving slow there. Because you, on a have-to-have-it fourth down play to save your season, on fourth and 10 at the 40-yard line, there's no way you're breaking the huddle at 7 seconds or whatever it was within 10. All right, last one here, and then we'll get to acknowledge me. The Texans still were hanging on. Down 11. Chance to cut it to a score. Here's what happened.
Field goal try from 35 yards out, right hash mark. Weeks with the snap. Tommy Townsend with the hold. And the kick is blocked. Man. The Chiefs have it, and they run out of bounds with it, and that's going to do it.
Yeah, Kaimi was awful. I mean, there's just no there's no sugarcoating it. He was terrible.
I wonder what... going into this game, I was like, okay, he got all the bad kicks out of his system. He'll be fine. And nope, I was dead wrong about that. I was dead wrong about worrying about the officiating being a factor, and I was dead wrong about Kaimi Fairbairn being anybody that you can trust to do anything at all on a football field.
No.
And it's been like that. It's been that way for a while now.
His kickoffs weren't even that good when he's kicking into the wind. They were running up and catching it at the 10-yard line with a head start. That was a big reason why they got a 63-yard return to open the game. So those are the highlights, I thought, that really kind of captured several themes of this game. The inability of the offensive line to protect in the second half, the special teams, just the complete cavalcade of errors that special teams was. Travis Kelce, the role he played in this game, highlighted the good. I thought the Texans did some good things offensively in this game. Ultimately, not enough, 23-14.
The one, I know people are upset about Dalton Schultz being tasked with blocking George Karlaftis on that sack. The Chiefs had a 6-man blitz going. You're going to end up with matchups like that. Dalton Schultz just simply can't be as bad as he is, and yet he is, and he's got a nice big contract that Nick gave him in the offseason. So, like, that is what it is. I don't know if all of a sudden at some point Dalton Schultz is going to turn into a guy who actually knows how to block next year. I'm highly skeptical.
The most frustrating thing about Dalton Schultz, Seth, is one of the things that we said last year and we said coming into this season is, yeah, Dalton Schultz isn't a good blocker, but he's a willing blocker. He tries. Yeah. It doesn't even look like he's really trying to block this year. Like, did you see one of the chips that he had in the... He was supposed to get a chip on a guy, and he runs by him and just touches him with his hands, like touches one of the numbers on his jersey and goes out into his route. Like, just...
Yeah.
It was a training camp practice where you're not, you know, don't go full speed. Just acknowledge that you're supposed to chip here by touching the guy. Like, no, this is the AFC divisional round. Like,
he's a big tough guy when it comes to shoving defensive backs after the play and getting into jawing matches with him. He tends to be a different person when it's actual full-grown men.
Actual large people, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to acknowledge me. Let's acknowledge the big performances, Texans and otherwise, from the weekend. And let's start with Will Anderson Jr. Here was one of his 2 sacks on the day.
Here's Mahomes getting the snap. Here's pressure. Mahomes is going to go down. He's sacked. Beautiful takedown by Will Anderson Jr. on 3rd down.
But we are witnessing the development of a very, very special player, and a player that is going to command a double team from this point in his career on.
Acknowledge me.
Yeah, sorry about that, Ben. Acknowledge me. Yeah, we got to acknowledge Will Anderson Jr. That 2 sacks, 3 TFLs, 2 QB hits. He had 1 sack where Joe Thuney was on his back. You know, like he's like carrying him like he's a backpack, Will Anderson was, and he brought Mahomes down. We're going to take inventory of the season here over the next several days, Seth. Like, what's good, what's bad, what happened this season that was really positive that we feel carries forward. Will Anderson Jr. getting himself into the conversation alongside the other great game disruptors in the NFL is a massive development for this team.
And it was fun watching him against Joe Thuney, who's playing out of position at left tackle, because Thuney, he almost looked like a high school kid who's like trying to use proper technique, and he's got his hands right out there, which you don't want to do against a good pass rusher. And Will just... Will did, he's done some nuanced things in his pass rush that he wasn't doing last year. He gave a little shimmy to Tooney, but never stopped moving forward at full speed as he did it. And then it was just a simple dip and rip for a sack. He's really coming into his own. And I think that there's still room for improvement as he becomes a genuinely polished pass rusher. That's the really exciting thing. As far as commanding double teams, he's got Danielle Hunter for at least one more year. And that's the fun part about it, too. If the Texans' defense could just start actually giving a damn about tackling properly, this could be a hell of a defense. But they're way too sloppy tackling. It's the biggest thing that's hurting them right now. In the defensive backfield, I mean, those two rookies, they're still continuing to get better. Well, like I feel very good about the trajectory of the defense. If they can just give a damn about tackling.
Let's acknowledge both those. The two rookies are Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter. Let's acknowledge.
Acknowledge me.
Hang on, Ben. Let's acknowledge the two corners. Yes, Derek Stingley Jr.
Acknowledge me.
Kamari Lassiter.
Acknowledge me.
Chief wide receivers had 5 catches for 45 yards. All of them were to Xavier Worthy, and I think most of it was just little Andy Reid trickeration around the line of scrimmage stuff. He only averaged 9 yards a catch, so obviously they were not attacking downfield with Xavier Worthy and his speed. I saw a stat. Stingley and Lassiter were only even targeted 3 times in the game, and they didn't give up any catch. 0 catches for 0 yards. There were so many times in this game, not so many times, but there were a few notable times in the game where Mahomes is back there for 5, 6, 7 seconds, and it's very clear nobody's coming open downfield.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when I started to get nervous about just the potential for flags. You know, and, okay, this is Mahomes. What are you going to do? He's gonna figure out a way to draw a 15-yard penalty because he's a sneaky SOB.
Yep.
Those guys, man, all credit to Caserio and D'Amico for identifying them and drafting them, because Kalen Bullock especially, I was not expecting this performance out of him this year, because I looked at him as kind of a guy who's a 2-year project. He's very young, very raw, and man, he just got better every single week during the season.
Those position rankings that come out every year by various outlets, 1 through 32, who's got the best running back room, who's got the best wide receiver. The Texans will be in the top 3 on all those lists for their secondary next year.
Yeah.
You know, Stingley, Lassiter, Bullock, you get Jalen Petrie back, Jimmy Ward's back for another year.
Well, and credit Eric Murray also. I think in the playoffs, Eric Murray showed up with some big plays. That PBU, man, because it wasn't like, Eric Murray was, he had a tough assignment, and he was, he could have made a better play on the ball initially, but he just kept fighting.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I almost could have been, if he'd been able to hold on to the football.
That was
goodness.
Wild. Yeah, like he almost.
Because on the, yeah.
Almost rolled on top of him as he was going to the ground, you know.
On the very next play, that was when Kelce had his big reception downfield.
Yep.
So it was kind of all for naught, but that was a great play by Eric Murray.
Murray did some good things in the postseason, no doubt. All right, let's acknowledge gamblers who had Texans plus 9.5.
Acknowledge me.
The Texans were trailing 23-12 very late in the game, and the Chiefs chose to do something that tactically a lot of teams do when there's under a minute to go in the game. They had the luxury of being able to just run some clock off by having their punter run straight backwards, run to the corner of the end zone, and get a safety. You know, and then there's less than 20 seconds left in the game, and it's a 2-possession game. Hey, let's just burn some clock, kick off, let C.J. Stroud kneel it out, and we win 23-14. Well, if you had either Chiefs minus 9.5 or Texans plus 9.5, that bleep mattered, man. It mattered big time because the score went from 23-12 to 23-14. Credit Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, Joe Buck in particular, for knowing exactly what people were thinking in sports books throughout the country.
Ariza will head out of the back of the end zone for safety. And there are a lot of people who are paying attention to that. That makes it a 9-point game.
World?
Al Michaels is smiling right now. Al Michaels is kidding.
Yeah, the reason they're alluding to Al Michaels there, Al Michaels has been making gambling references at the end of games for decades now.
Right. Except I wonder if they knew exactly how Al Michaels had actually
Oh, what side he was on?
Yeah.
What side? Yeah. Or what he got.
I felt good because I recommended that people take the points in this game for the Texans, and there you have
it. You
had
the
That's the only thing about. Listen, I don't. People are going to have their conspiracy theories about games being fixed and all of that. I only ask that they actually just root it in some kind of logic as to the actual motivation of who would be. Because you can't have it both ways in this game. If you believe that games are scripted, you can't believe that the officials were out to get the Texans and the league wanted the Chiefs to win. Yet at the same time, at the very end of the game, the most conscious decision they could make was one that actually hurt the Chiefs on the line. I'll listen to your conspiracy theories, but you've got to have them rooted in some kind of actual motivation that makes sense.
It could be two parties at work here. The league might want the Chiefs to win, but it could be the cartel that wants the Texans to cover.
Yes.
You know,
the cartel is honestly the where a lot of the logic breaks down in the conspiracy theories, because people love to say, oh, well, Vegas wants this or Vegas wants that. Like, Vegas is dozens and dozens of different huge casinos and sportsbooks that are all in competition with each other.
Yeah.
When there's gambling in sports, it's because of individual operators. It's because some individual player got their hooks into him or something. That's when the point shaving happens. As far as like Vegas or the league wanting a certain income or outcome, that's where the logic kind of breaks down.
The calling it Vegas is a malaprop now because it's not just Vegas anymore. Like there's sports books all over the place. Like that's
it's a false generalization.
Coordinated effort that would have to take place. All right, let's keep it moving. Let's acknowledge the Rams defense here. Why are we doing that? Well, the Rams defense held Saquon Barkley to just 205 yards and two touchdowns, which was a full 50 yards and one touchdown better than what they did back in week 12 against him. You know, it was 255 and three tutties back then. Like they held him to just 205 yards and two touchdowns in their loss to the Eagles. I'm being very sarcastic here. The Rams defense was, I would say, pretty abysmal, giving up the 200 yards, although it was on two gigantic plays, a lot of it.
It was on two plays. Both those games yesterday, the weather was a huge factor, especially with the ball sloppiness. And I thought that the Rams defensive line, by and large, was making life really, really difficult for Jalen Hurts. I mean, at one point, Jalen Hurts had an ugly knee injury that I thought I was surprised that he actually continued to play, and he looked a little bit hampered by it. But the weather conditions really played a big part in kind of randomizing yesterday's games.
Yep, no doubt. So way to go, Rams defense. You improved. You're not advancing in the playoffs. Saquon Barkley and the Eagles are, but you improved. All right, let's get to these other two here real quick. Lou Holtz.
Acknowledge me.
He has managed to go all these last 10 or 12 days without saying anything, at least that I've seen, that would rile up Ryan Day and Ohio State to the same degree it apparently did last season when Ohio State and Notre Dame played early, I believe week one or two of the season last year, when after the game, Ryan Day, first question of the post-game availability on the field, this is what he had to say.
Coach, you knew this one wasn't going to be easy, but it came down to the wire. And what can you say about the performance from your quarterback, Kyle McCord, to finish that drive?
Toughness, that's it. Physicality, across the board, finish it off, having guts. You know, like I like to know where Lou Holtz is right now. What he said about our team, I cannot believe. This is a tough team right here. We're proud to be from Ohio, and it's always been Ohio against the world, and it'll continue to be Ohio against the world. But I'll tell you what, I love those kids, and we got a tough team.
Now,
according to one of those...
As I pick on an old man.
I want to know where Lou Holtz is. He's in a chair somewhere. I promise you that.
He might be being fed by a tube as we speak.
Now, Lou is going to be at the game tonight because I was sent a picture. A buddy of mine's in fundraising at Notre Dame, and he was on the same flight that Lou Holtz was on. Like, it's a private jet, but he was on the same flight that Lou Holtz is on to head to Atlanta tonight. My buddy's wearing a Catholics versus Convicts t-shirt on the plane. Sitting next to Lou Holtz. It was a pretty funny visual. Tonight, Ohio State, Notre Dame. This is yet another team that I root for, Seth, that is an 8.5-point underdog heading into the game tonight. I need Notre Dame to pick me up.
Let's hope Betty White didn't say anything derogatory. Oh, she died.
She's dead.
Let's hope some other lady like Betty White didn't say anything. Some octogenarian former Hollywood celeb didn't say anything about Ohio State.
Excited, man, for the game tonight. This will be fun. All right, last one. Jameis Winston.
Acknowledge me!
Jameis, I love people leaning into their past, things they may have done, and not running from it, but using it in a either self-deprecating fashion, or in the case of Jameis Winston, I'm assuming he's getting paid for this promotion for a seafood outlet. You get free crab legs if you place your order using his promo code.
What's up, y'all? Jameis here. As you make your plans for the big game, go right now to get a pound of free crab legs with the purchase of $250 or more from Fulton Fish Market, an official partner of SFC. So go now to FultonFishMarket.com/free crab.
He's looking at the camera. He's holding gigantic crab legs in his hand right at the camera.
I'll tell you what with Jameis Winston. I think, you know, I credit him with it. He recognized at some point a few years ago, all right, I can't be drinking. He had an alcohol, you know, he just, like, sometimes being an alcoholic isn't about having to have a drink every day. It's like, okay, that when you do drink, you do really, really dumb and stupid things.
Yeah.
And that 100% was Jameis Winston. And it's kind of turned him around into, now it's, he's turned his lack of self-awareness into an asset instead of a drain on him. And it's nice to see.
It's endearing.
And there's a certain level of self-awareness now that he hasn't even making that joke, obviously. But yeah, it's endearing. He just had to clean up his life a little bit.
He had me hungry, man. Those crab legs look good. All right, those are your acknowledgments for this past weekend. We do acknowledge me every Monday, and we will continue to do it. The Texans season does not dictate us acknowledging people. This just in, people are going to continue to have great performances as the year rolls on. So we do that every Monday. If you're new to the show, 7:20, we acknowledge the big performances. All right, up next, a Freudian slip by CJ in his post-game availability, perhaps? Perhaps on Saturday? We'll let you hear that. We'll let you guys be the judge of that. We'll do that coming up next.
Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Mokarum Injury Lawyers Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
I think we had a really good team this year. They looked really good. I thought we were the better team on the field today. We have a lot of great guys in the locker room, and the arrows pointed up. We're really excited, and I can't tell you how much we appreciate the fans and the way they were there for us all year long. And everybody on the bandwagon, and it was a really great ride, and I'm sorry it ended.
We're really sad it ended.
Yeah, that was Cal McNair and Hannah McNair, obviously. That was the very end of the post-game show following Saturday's loss to the Chiefs, about 9:30. Clint and I were wrapping up, we're finishing up the show, Seth, and Clint and I are just chopping it up here in studio. I'm looking down at my phone, and Cal McNair's calling me at like 9:27 for a show that's ending at 9:30. Yeah. And my immediate thought was, man, I wonder if we said something that needed to be corrected or addressed, because the McNairs never weigh in like, hey, you guys said this and it should be that or whatever. Like, they're very hands off when it comes to our opinions on the team.
We're honestly like very lucky in that regard.
Yes.
Compared to other sports teams,
no doubt. Yeah. No, they're a dream to work with. But no, Cal was calling me, and I'm getting texts from Hannah and Omar at the same time. I'm like, holy crap, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And they just wanted to call in and thank the fans and talk about the season a little bit and say that they thought they were the better team today and were excited for next season. And I think that echoes. I think a lot of people are feeling like the arrow's pointed up on this team right now.
It is. Like, on a down-in, down-out basis, there's a lot of things that the Texans just flat-out did better this year. Offensively, yes, we know, like, we've seen it all year long. There's work and there's progress that needs to be made. Some of that progress, I feel like it actually happened in the playoffs. As you pointed out earlier when I was talking about the running game starting to click, that was versus two good defenses. Mm-hmm. You know, previously when they'd been able to run the ball, it tended not to be against good defenses. They'd go up against a team like the Lions and they would just be running into a brick wall. They had sustained long drives in the second half of both these last games where they actually ran the ball very, very effectively and consistently. It wasn't three TFLs and then a long Joe Mixon run. So that part is encouraging. For me, aside from all the Pat Mahomes officiating nonsense that sucked, If you're just tuning in, Sean and I have conceded, okay? All right? You don't have to say told you so. We've already done it to ourselves 900 million times
this
morning.
You're wrong.
Yeah. But the special teams falling apart the way they did. I would not have expected that.
No.
If you had told me going into this game, hey, the Chiefs are going to get 8 sacks, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that sucks, but, you know. Yeah, I expect. If you would have told me that the special teams were going to be a flaming disaster, that really would have made me be like, well, how? Why? Like, okay, is it? Do you mean because Kaimi? Well, yeah, but also,
yeah,
also because of a long kickoff return, because of a weird penalty by Chris Boyd, because of a 34-yard punt by Tommy Townsend, multiple things in special teams were just atrocious.
Yeah, yeah, it was another one of those games that unfortunately. The Texans had one of those games where no team since ... has had stats like this and gone on to lose the game. Like the Texans have done this 4 or 5 times now, 3 in particular. The Lions game with 5 picks, that was a complete outlier, like a since 1970 style outlier. The Tennessee game with the 8 sacks and the pick 6, only 3 teams have won a game where they've sustained that type of carnage offensively and gone on to win since like 1960. And then no team in the postseason has ever lost a game. 49 times before this has ever lost a game where they outgained their opponent by 100 or more yards and didn't turn the ball over. Like the Texans checked many of the boxes that you would have thought made a surefire victory. They were 10 of 17 on third down in Arrowhead Stadium. That's a remarkable number. They did it at home, let alone on the road in that environment. So there was a lot they did good. Unfortunately, it was outweighed by the bad and the officiating. That's what happened.
You know what I did yesterday, finally, Sean, because I recognized that I was getting really, like, boy, I think I was entering an actual depression. Not just a sports depression, but an actual depression. Try to seek out baby animal videos on social media.
Is there a specific animal that did it for you or anything?
A baby capybara. Okay. Which many Houstonians pointed out that looks a lot like a nutria, which makes it less cute. But baby animals.
Okay, good recommendation.
The one on X that I follow is Amazing Nature. That's they've always got cute animal videos.
Oh, okay, yeah. See, I like
that's my stress management.
I like
device.
The animal videos where the animals are attacking each other. You know,
well, that's a little less. That's not as calming and peacing.
No, I wouldn't recommend it for after a Texans game. I just find them to be entertaining on the aggregate. Hey, real quick, just to pay off on what I tease into this. Here was C.J. Stroud talking about how he can't wait to get going in the offseason here. Is there a Freudian slip at the end of this
one? Yeah, I'm super proud of, you know, Mitch, Hutch, Jay Wayne, you know, Neek stepped up as a leader this year, and we needed that, you know, and solidified himself as a top receiver in his league, and, you know, the guys around him did great. I thought, you know, Dalton, you know, held his own. Of course, you know, like Cade going out, but Cade was holding his own all the way until last week. You know, we've been battling, man. It's not been easy, you know, but at the same time, that's ball, though. Like, a lot of teams are hurt right now and just figuring it out. So, but I'm super proud of those guys stepping up. And, you know, I'm can't wait to get Tank back on the field, you know. Keep him in your prayers, of course. And, you know, Steph will be back on the field soon. And, you know, hopefully it's with us. So, I'm still hopeful, you know, I get to play with those guys, and can't wait for it.
All right, so Steph, as soon as he's had Steph, I'm like, ooh, whoa, does he know something? And he's like, well, if it's back with us, yeah.
Yeah, he caught himself. Maybe he's manifesting it, you know. Well, I think Stephon Diggs has said and done pretty much everything right, other than that one commercial where you felt like he was taking a shot at the Texans, that Domino's commercial.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, which we were joking about that. I mean, he's been everything you would want out of a veteran leader on the team, other than the age and injury part of it. So even if Steph comes back, and even if Tank Dell, you know, makes an incredible recovery, you can't objectively and rationally depend on those two things.
No.
Like, if Steph comes back, he is still also a guy in his 30s coming off of an ACL whose calling guard is his speed and short area quickness and all of that. And Tank Dell just had a horrific, horrific injury that might take a full year to recover from. They're going to have to go out and get a wide receiver.
Receivers in need.
But maybe do it. Look, hey, these days we've seen over and over again a second-round wide receiver can make a big impact as a rookie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so a lot to get into still throughout the week. Have you guys touched on Chris Boyd yet, coming off the field, shoving the coach?
Oh, yeah.
We did. We hit everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but we're going to continue to attack it throughout the week, man. This is our last 2 hour Monday, Seth. So we're back to 4 hours starting next Monday.
If you come in, if Notre Dame wins tonight, I'm going to shove you in celebration, like Chris Boyd shoved Frank Ross in celebration.
I love that. I hope I get shoved into the wall by Seth Payne tomorrow.
To the point where people are calling for me to get cut immediately.
Yes.
And they're like, no, he was celebrating. He was really dumb that he was celebrating, but he was just celebrating, just really stupidly.
Antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you as well.